This is continuing coverage in the trial of Alex Murdaugh from True Crime Today.
Welcome back. We're at segment number four of continuing coverage in the trial of Alex Murdaugh. My name is Tony Bruschi. Thanks for joining us. Let's head back to the courtroom.
Thank you. You may proceed. Yes, sir.
When was the last time that gun had been seen? Do you know of?
I know that we looked for it around the Christmas holidays. Or we went to get it around the Christmas holidays. I asked about it around the Christmas holidays.
Of 20? This past Christmas holidays?
Sir.
Okay. And that was the replacement. What I guess we call it.
That's correct.
Okay. Still trying to figure this out. I cannot exclude the boat incident and those involved. I know that y'all are currently going through the civil portion. How far had that progressed? I mean, were y'all in the talks? Was it breaking down?
Can I say something real quick? I know nothing about the any of that stuff. And he's represented by lawyers in that case. Mm-hmm. I don't think I personally believe he shouldn't be talking about that unless the lawyers he's represented by participate. I don't think it's, I mean, I'm sure that they're happy to do that, mm-hmm. but I don't think that a person should be talking about a pending action like that without their lawyers knowing about it. And what, because I know nothing about it. I'm completely separated from it.
I don't mind, you know, I have insurance companies hired lawyers, and then, you know, some of my partners are helping with that also. But, you know, it's made some progress. It's still unresolved, but it's not in its initial stages by any means.
Okay. And what I'm getting at with this, you know, it's in progress. I just want to make sure that it's not make sure bad word there. You know, did one party say this and y'all countered or something like that where the other people are pissed off and now we have somebody out there with more motive because now they're thinking, you know, Paul's going to get away with this. And
I mean, I'm not aware of any of those discussions. The only thing that I am aware of is that I've learned that one of the daddies of one of the kids in the boat wreck went to lengths to, or maybe it was his son, I don't know, but I was told that there are people out there that were being told you can't be friends with Paul and the Murdaughs and with us. You gotta choose.
And that was a dad going out telling?
I don't know.
Or it was that dad or that kid going out saying this stuff?
I don't know that. I was told by a person who had been told that. It's Nate Tootin is the boy's name. Okay. So
is that,
you can find out from him.
Is that any kin to Nolan?
It's Nolan's younger brother.
Okay.
It's Nolan's younger brother. So
okay.
answer this, yes, gentleman. Buster, yeah, and I have a deal. Buster?
You probably don't get much service in here.
Buster? Buster?
You go outside, hit that green button on the right.
Apparently there's a period here where we've agreed we'll fast forward, which will pick back up when he comes back in. And the defense has agreed with that, it's my understanding.
This is the Snapchat video that I'm talking about from Paul's phone.
Okay, I tell you what. Yeah, we were laughing about that because he's laughing because I've gone to great lengths to try to, a tree had gotten knocked over, and I've gone to great lengths to try to get it to, you know, be upright.
Okay.
And
was that that night? Because the friends that we talked to said it was posted that night.
I'm not sure.
Somebody's phone on?
Sir?
Somebody's phone on? No, it's somebody's phone. I hear like somebody talking in the background. Like it was a call that had dropped or something. Anybody from the boat or their family that you've heard or know? Have any issues with them recently or prior to this incident?
Like any confrontations?
Or them saying anything in the community about the lawsuit or the pending charges, anything that would kind of lead me.
I mean, David, I told you about the, you know, the, Kenya, Treehorn, a month or so. Maybe 6 weeks before this happened, called me, you know, just all out of sorts, you know, and told me, I told you about this,
yes,
right?
Yes, we've interviewed her, yes, sir.
So, I mean, she said she'd heard it from two different places that family from the boat wreck was, you know, it was, it just, you know, it was over the top that I really didn't paid a bunch of attention. You know, and I asked her about it. She said she didn't know who the people were, but she said that it was with a friend. It was at a friend's party. she knew who the friend was and would take y'all to the friend. So, you know, has she talked to you about that?
She's given us very little.
Do you feel like she's being evasive? Because let me tell you what I've tried not to do. I know y'all have to look at me. I've tried to have as little discussions with the people that y'all are interviewing. You know, with all this talk about how I fixed this and fixed that with the boat wreck, which is totally untrue. You know, I've tried to not have a lot of conversation with people that, you know y'all need to talk to.
Well, the problem that I encounter, and I think everybody in law enforcement encounters in any investigation, people on the street talk, and they run their mouth, and they'll talk to friends, and they'll talk to families, and they'll talk to victims. But when the police show up, they keep their mouth shut.
So she's not talking to
you? She has given us some information.
Okay.
Some information.
So is there a problem with me going to her and, you know?
I'm not going to answer that.
So you're not telling me not to do it?
I'm not going to answer that.
Okay.
Either way,
I'll get somebody to talk to her. All right? To try to get her to cooperate with you.
Darn. Allergies. All right, do you have any more questions that I might be able to answer? If you can't think of any now, reach out, call me.
I will know. I mean, you've answered a lot of things I had questions about, and I appreciate it.
And I'll call the Brandstetters and see if they want to meet. Maybe get Marion up there at the same time so I can just meet with them all together. Does Marion, I know they live on the Wamba Law, does Marion work?
No, she doesn't work. And they're, you know, they're kind of between Wamba Law and, I mean, they're residents of the state of Florida, but okay. They're here as much as they, but they're in Greenville a lot right now.
Yeah, because of grandbaby.
The baby, that's right.
Okay. Thank you, ma'am.
Yeah. I just saw a few more questions.
Okay.
Did you kill Maggie?
No. Did I kill my wife?
Yes, sir.
No, David.
Do you know who did?
No, I do not know who did.
Did you kill Paul?
No, I did not kill Paul.
Do you know who did?
No, sir, I do not know who did. Do you think I killed Maggie?
I have to go where the evidence and the facts
take
me.
I understand that. And you think I killed Paul?
I have to go where the evidence and the facts take me, and I don't have anything that points to anybody else at this time.
So does that mean that I am a suspect?
You were still in, like I told Corey earlier, you were still in this. With everything that we've talked about, with the family guns, the ammunition, nobody else's DNA. I have to put my beliefs aside and go with the facts.
Talking with Mr. Griffin, there's one sentence after that before we redacted. We both agreed that I could leave and ask you after that last question. Do you say, well, I understand, I mean, and yes. Shaking his head?
Yes.
So on August 11th of 2021, after this interview, during this interview, did you consider Alex Murdaugh a suspect in the death of his son and his wife?
He was the only known suspect at that time, yes.
And that day was the case transferred from Solicitor Duffy Stone to Attorney General Alan Wilson with the South Carolina Attorney General's office.
Yes, it was.
I just want to go back right before we ended, and I'm not trying to get you to repeat this, but do you remember when you asked, or do you remember when he told you, I know y'all got to look at me, and I've tried to have as little discussions with people that y'all are interviewing, you know, with all this talk about that. You remember that?
Yes, I do.
How did you take that statement to mean, his answer when he said that?
That he was trying to stay out of the investigation and let us do our work.
Okay. In early in the investigation, he asked you about, that tree going back and forth. And was he clear on when that video was taken of him in that clothes on the tree? Was he clear?
He didn't recall.
At this point, had you already talked to Blanca Simpson? Or had she been talked to, reference?
She had been interviewed, yes.
Okay. And at some point after August 11th, did Blanca's system also provide some information in investigations about a conversation she had with the defendant, Alex Murdaugh?
Yes.
Okay. And was that concerning a shirt?
Yes. Several months later, she provided information that she and Alec had had a conversation about what he had been wearing that day when he left to go to work.
And just briefly going through the interview, you asked him about when Maggie was coming to Mazzeo and why. Did you have in this course of the investigation, did you have the emails from Blanca and or Maggie's phone to each other then?
No, I did not.
And early on in the interview, you asked him how long he'd stayed at his mama's house?
Yes, and he stayed at approximately 45 minutes.
45 minutes, an hour?
Yes, sir. 45 minutes to an hour, yes.
And at that point in the investigation, had you talked to Nichelle Shelley Smith about a conversation she had with Alex Murdaugh and the amount of time that he said he was there?
Yes, she had been interviewed by that time. Again, there were so many agents going out and doing interviews and reporting back to me. But she stated that it was somewhere around 20 minutes. I don't have her report. I don't remember exactly what was said, but I know in our first interview, he had stated that it was around, he had spent about 20, 30 minutes with his mother.
And did your investigation reveal inconsistencies regarding what Mr. Murdaugh had told you?
Yes, I did.
And was that significant to you in your investigation?
It was, because it wasn't one inconsistency, it was several inconsistencies over a period of time that were repeated.
Now, you asked him about a list of guns several times in these interviews. Did you ever get a list of guns from Alex Murdaugh?
I have not.
Between June 7th, 2021 and August 11th, 2021, this interview, how many times did he call you asking about the investigation?
We spoke approximately 5 or 6 times.
What were the inconsistencies that you stood out in your mind?
The times, for one, from the first interview with his, where he went to his mother's. Refer back to my notes.
Time in his mother's, is it fair just to say that?
So when he, the first interview in June, he stated that it was at his mother's for approximately, first off, he stated for a little while. And then the second interview on June the 10th, it changed to It's about 25 or 30 minutes, and then the other, the third interview, it was 45 minutes to an hour. And then some other inconsistencies is how much time he spent with Paul riding around. The first time it was 45 minutes to an hour. The next time he talked about riding on the farm anywhere from an hour and a half to 2 hours. And then the inconsistencies, you know, I had the information from Rogan Gibson that he heard Alec. He believed he heard Alec in the background. And on the three interviews, Alec never indicated that he was at the kennels, that he was at the house either taking a nap, playing on his phone, or watching TV, and this was after dinner.
Bless you. Was he ever inconsistent about whether or not he went down to the kennel after supper that last?
Yes.
Did he ever say he did go down there after dinner?
He never told me he went down there after dinner.
Never told you that?
He told me he took a nap and then he was at the house after dinner. Maggie, he knew Maggie went to the kennels. At first, he wasn't sure where Paul went, but then he realized that Paul must have gone to the kennels because that's where he found him, but then he stayed at the house, took a nap.
Now, there's been some discussion, and I think your testimony was he brought it up on the 911 case about the boat case?
Yes, sir.
And that happened in what year?
February of 2019.
And was that case null prosequi, dismissed by the Attorney General's office in the after Paul's death? Can you prosecute a dead man?
No, sir, you cannot. And it's my understanding that the Attorney General's office null-pros Paul's case in August of 2021.
So that case, criminally, like we're in a criminal courtroom, was over?
Yes, sir.
At some point in 2021, in the fall, did a financial investigation begin involving Alex Murdaugh?
Yes, sir.
Would it be fair to say that overlapped with this investigation?
It did.
Would it be fair to say those investigations fed off each other?
They did. From the information that I was learning from that investigation into the finances, it gave me additional people to consider, to look at. And consider even to look at Mr. Murdaugh as, you know, a reason why or why not.
Were there individuals in the financial investigation that you also interviewed in reference to this investigation?
I did.
Did some of that information you learned from interviews or grand jury testimony?
Yes, I did.
Did you then follow up on some of that information?
Yes, I did.
And from August, September 21,
through the summer of 22, were you, as a member of the South Carolina Law Enforcement Division, working exclusively or primarily on this case?
That's correct.
And were search warrants still out there you were waiting on?
Yes, sir. There's a multitude of search warrants.
And let's talk just a moment, and I'm about through about the phones, if we could.
Okay.
You, law enforcement, got Maggie Murdaugh's phone when? I mean, when did you actually take physical custody of her?
Maggie Murdaugh's phone was recovered on June 8th, 2021, on the side of Moselle Road.
And what... were you able to do a... You, law enforcement, you know what I'm talking about, able to get a... How much information did you get from Maggie's phone in this investigation?
The family gave us, I believe it actually came from Alec or either Buster, but we got access to her phone via her password, so we were able to do a full extraction from her phone.
Full extraction?
Yes, sir.
And some of that is included in the timeline that's already been entered. It's going to be entered by Mr. Waters in a little bit, right?
Yes, sir.
Full extraction?
Full extraction.
Now, how about Alex's phone? Was it initially taken on June 7th or June 8th?
It was not taken on June 7th or June 8th. We got an extraction on June 10th when we met for our second interview. But that, again, that was just a logical extraction, not a full extraction.
Which was, I don't really understand, but that's the surface, right?
That's just the surface.
Off the top. All right. Did you ever get that phone back?
In September, yes, sir.
September. And at that point, was further information attempted to be gathered from Alex Murdaugh's phone?
Yes, sir.
And how successful was that?
Being the time difference between June and September, a lot of the earlier on information had been overwritten. Just the way the computers work, you have to clear out memory to make room for new memory. So some information had been not erased but cached out. So we were able to gain some information from the logical in June and compare it to the full extraction that we got in September.
And were you able to determine what had been erased also?
There were some phone calls that had been erased, yes.
Now let's talk about Paul's phone. And to go back in the interview just very briefly on Paul's phone, sorry, Judge, one second. I apologize. You would ask him when he turned Paul over and his cell phone popped out. Do you remember that?
Yes, I do.
And what's his answer just a little while ago? I don't know. I mean, when I went up to him, the phone came out, but I don't remember having any intentions of doing anything with the phone.
Well, the first interview, he stated that the phone popped out and that he picked it up and thought about doing something with it, thought better of it, and put it back down.
In this interview, he said it came out, right?
Yes.
Now, Paul's phone, did y'all attempt to do? So you had it from June 7th until today?
Yes.
Okay. Were you able to do a full extraction on Paul's phone?
We were able to finally do a full extraction in March of 2022.
Okay. March of 2022?
Yes, sir.
What, if any, information came as a result of that extraction after March of 2022?
The kennel video.
That we've all seen,
yes. The kennel video where Paul is videotaping the chocolate lab. And you can hear Maggie and Paul and Alec in there.
And that
video is time-stamped at 8:44.
Say it again?
8:44 p.m.
And until that day, what day was it? Do you know? Well, if you don't, that's fine. But it came out.
I believe I got the information on April 8th of 2022.
Until that day, and it was extracted, to your knowledge, did anybody else in the world know that was on there except Paul?
Nobody, to my knowledge.
And up until this past, well, was information in this investigation gathered up through last weekend?
Yes, it is.
And what was that?
The General Motors information from Alex's 2021 Suburban.
So SLED from June 7th, in combinations with the locals, the feds, have been investigating this case nonstop.
That is correct.
Where is it? What is it?
Matter of the Paul Shoes moving into evidence 103. I don't believe there's an objection to that. Did they talk to you about that? Objection. Thank you, gentlemen. 36 without objection. I don't believe I asked you this before the couple of questions. Were there any other credible leads that you've investigated that led you to anybody else beside Alex Murdoch?
Not credible, no, sir.
Did you follow up with every lead that came in on this case, social media or otherwise?
Yes, we did.
All the SLED did?
Yes, sir.
Locals?
Collin County as well, yes.
Law enforcement really worked together on this case, didn't it?
Yes, we did.
And is the individual that you took this statement from on August 11th of 2021 in the courtroom?
Yes, he is.
Sitting between Mr. Harpootlin and Mr. Griffin?
Yes, sir, in a blue blazer and white shirt.
We'd ask the record so reflect. That's all we have at this time. Thank you.
Cross-examination.
Good afternoon, sir.
Let me get my stuff organized here. We've heard you explain, and I think Agent Croft explained about sort of the investigative circle.
Yes, sir.
And I think you talked to Alec about that on the video, that he is in the circle.
Yes, sir.
And he was in the circle from the moment he called 911, correct?
I would say yes.
And no one had to give you any lead to put him in the circle, right?
No, sir. He called 911. He's the one who discovered. He's the one who discovered him. He's closest in relation to him.
So when you're asked about, were you given any other credible leads except the one that led to Alec Murdoch, I mean, he was there from the moment he called 911.
Yes, sir.
And what has happened over the last year and a half, 2 years, is, as you explained, you've been unable to get him out of the circle. Isn't that right?
That is correct.
So if someone's in the circle and can't get themselves out, they end up sitting over there where he is today. That's what happens. Isn't that right?
As long as there's credible evidence to keep them in that circle, yes.
We're going to get to that. Here, SLED failed to take immediate steps. I mean, maybe it's not all SLED, but SLED and the Culloden County Sheriff's Department failed to take immediate steps to preserve evidence that could possibly exclude Alec Murdoch from that circle. Do you agree with that?
I don't think it was a failure, no, sir.
Well, let's get this right. Your investigation, as I understand it, leads you to conclude that Paul and Maggie were murdered sometime between 8:50 p.m. on June the 7th and 9:06 p.m., correct?
Yes, sir.
And whoever murdered Maggie and Paul would, at a minimum, have in their possession an AR-15-style assault rifle and a 12-gauge shotgun, correct?
Not unless they got rid of it.
Well, the moment they were murdered,
yes,
someone had to have, one person or two people had to have murder weapons, right?
Yes.
Paul was murdered with a 12-gauge, right?
Yes, sir.
You would agree then that the murderer had a 12-gauge shotgun?
Yes.
You would agree that the murderer had some AR-15 style assault weapon that killed Maggie, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And you would agree at the time they were murdered, they would have those weapons?
Yes.
And would you agree that whoever murdered Maggie and Paul would likely have blood and biological material on them following the shotgun blast that essentially blew Paul's brains out of his head?
They would have some, yes.
And on the night of June the 7th, you said it was after midnight, so it would go early morning hours, but 1 a.m. on June the 8th, you interviewed Alec, and he told you that he had left Moselle sometime between 9 and 9:10 to check on his mother. Is that right?
That is correct.
So if Alex was the perpetrator, as alleged, he would have had to brutally murder his wife and son sometime after 8:50 p.m. and 9:06, dispose of the murder weapons either somewhere on the Moselle property, within the Moselle residence, along the drive to Alameda, or at his mother's residence or property at Alameda. Is that correct?
Yes.
Now, immediately at the when law enforcement arrived, they secured the immediate murder scene.
That is my understanding, yes.
Down at the kennels. And they eventually thoroughly searched the Moselle residence. There was search of the Moselle residence the next day, correct?
That is correct.
Do you know what time that was? Early afternoon, late morning?
That's approximate time, yes.
And no murder weapons were found in the residence, is that correct?
That is correct.
And no murder weapons were found on the property at Moselle, is that correct?
That is correct.
And was a search of the route between Moselle and Alameda ever done?
It wasn't walked from Moselle to Alameda, but it was driven several times.
Okay. And you didn't find any weapons there, correct?
No, sir.
And was a search of the waterways along the route done between Moselle and Alameda?
Most waterways, yes.
Excuse me?
Most waterways, I don't know if every single one was searched, but there were several waterways searched.
Now, we know from the General Motors OnStar data that was delivered during the middle of this trial that Alec did not stop from the moment he left Moselle to drive to Alameda. Is that correct?
Correct.
You've reviewed that?
Yes.
There's no detours along the way, correct?
No, sir.
And you never searched the Alameda property for any signs of murder evidence, guns, bloody clothes, or anything until well after sometime in mid to late September. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And you could have searched Almeda that night, correct?
If I had probable cause to, yes, sir.
Well, was anybody denying consent to search? When I say anybody, well, Alec Murdoch gave you carte blanche consent to search anywhere in those properties, did he
yes,
not?
Yes, he did.
And John Marvin was assisting SLED and facilitating wherever you wanted to look. Wasn't he doing that?
He was, but the night of June 7th, even though Alec was in the circle, basically by default because of his close relationship with the victims and finding them, I did not consider him the main suspect or the only suspect because I had no probable cause and no evidence to support that he killed his wife and son.
Well, if a thorough, tight, quick, prompt investigation had been taken of the Moselle property, the route to Almeda, and the Almeda property, that could have possibly excluded Alec from the circle, couldn't it? If you found no evidence of guns, bloody clothes, or anything, right?
If you know what you're looking for and where to look, and have some type of information that would lead you to that area, yes.
And that opportunity was missed. Would you agree with that?
I wouldn't say it was missed because it wasn't known about, other than, you know, several hours later when we get to the bodies and there are no weapons found. It wasn't until the casings and the shot shells were recovered that I actually knew what the calibers were.
No, I get, okay. It's pretty clear the night of the murders, Collin County Sheriff's deputies on the scene recognized the shell casings as being 300 blackouts, correct?
That is what they told me, okay. But I want to verify for myself.
Right. And by 6, 7, 8 o'clock the next morning on June the 8th, Rogan Gibson had been interviewed where he said, I thought I heard Alec Murdoch's voice in the background, right?
Yes, sir.
And Alec had told you that he had gone to, he left Moselle and gone to Almeda, right?
Yes.
And so as of the late morning of June the 8th, let me back up. That first interview with Alec, you state that he did not inform you that he was down at the kennels after dinner, right?
That is correct.
He said you get information from Rogan Gibson that contradicted that.
Yes.
And Alec Murdoch is in the middle of the circle on the morning of June the 8th.
Well, I still needed to build a timeline because speaking with Alec, he was giving me some times, and I needed to build that timeline. And not having that coupled with Rogan's statement that he was 100% sure he was on the phone with Paul. He was 100% sure that he heard Maggie. He was only 99% sure, even though it's a great percentage. He said he was 99% sure it was Alec. I needed to gather some more information before I just go back and confront Alec on that.
Sure. Well, tell me what the thought process was behind searching the Moselle residence. What were you looking for?
Any types of ammunition. It was 300 blackout. We had the 12 gauge shot shells. We know that it's hunting's going on. Hunting goes on out there of all types. In the shed, there was some additional ammunition that was in a bucket. Needed to see what type of ammunition or firearms were in the house to try to get documentation of what was missing, what was there.
And why was Agent McAllister looking in the tubs and in the drains? Guns?
Why was she?
Yeah.
You'll have to ask her. I wasn't there.
I mean, it's obvious that you were searching to see if there had any evidence of blood in the house. I mean, you'd want to do that, right?
Yes.
Because Alec's in the circle and he had been to the house.
Yes, sir.
Alec's in the circle and he'd been to Almeda, right?
Yes, sir.
And no one went to Almeda to look for guns, or blood or bloody clothes, did they?
Not that day, no, sir.
Would you agree that was an opportunity missed?
For Almeida, yes.
Okay. Now, we talked about the murder weapons. You would expect that the murder weapons would also have on them, at least the shotgun, the 12-gauge that killed Paul, would have some biological material, blood, on the shotgun. Fair enough?
Fair enough.
And the assault weapon and the shotgun would have GSR on it, would it not?
Yes.
And if someone were transporting shotgun with blood on it and a rifle with GSR on it, and you got their vehicle, you would look for signs of that in their vehicle, would you not?
Yes.
And that was done here, was it not?
It was done on the Suburban and the Mercedes, yes.
Excuse me?
It was done on the Suburban and the Mercedes, yes.
Yeah, and so there's nothing in the Suburban, there's no blood in the back where people would possibly carry guns. And when I say the back, I'm talking the back.
Cargo area, yes.
Yeah. There's no evidence of blood back there, right?
No, sir.
No evidence of GSR back there, was there?
No, sir.
There's no evidence of blood or GSR in the second or third seats, correct?
No, sir.
And the only GSR found in the Suburban was one speck on a seat belt buckle, right?
That is correct.
And there was one drip of blood confirmed on the steering wheel that comes back with Maggie's DNA. Is that right?
Yes.
And we know from the General Motors stuff we just got during the trial that Suburban never went down to the kennels until after Alec came back from Almeida. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
So can we rule out that Alec put any guns from the murder in the back of the Suburban?
Unless it was wrapped in something.
Okay. And have you found anything it was wrapped in?
We have a blue raincoat that has numerous particles of GSR in it.
Let's talk about that blue raincoat for a second.
Certainly.
You developed information about a blue tarp from interviewing or SLED agents interviewing Shelly Smith. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
And when you're doing a search sometime in September at Almeida for this blue tarp, you find a blue rain jacket rolled up in a closet, right?
I believe it was balled up, yes, sir.
You say balled up. And you were there during the search, right?
Yes, sir.
And you also found a tarp somewhere else on the property, right? In the attic or somewhere?
Yes, sir. It was on the second floor, folded up in a tote in a closet with other things on top of the tote.
And so this blue rain jacket, you showed it to Shelly Smith, didn't you, and say, is this what you were talking about?
I showed her a picture.
You showed a picture to Shelly Smith?
I showed a picture to Shelly Smith to ask her if it was the similar color.
And when did you show Shelly Smith that picture?
I believe it was last month.
Last month? Was it during trial?
No, sir.
Is it preparing for trial?
I believe so, yes.
Okay. But you had not shown her that before Alec Murdoch had been indicted for murder, right?
No, sir.
But you had shown that blue rain jacket to a number of people to see if they recognized.
I showed it to family members to see if they recognized it as being Alec, Maggie, Paul's, Buster's, or anybody else in the family.
And not a single family member recognized that blue rain jacket?
No, they did not.
And Shelly Smith described the tarp as she saw it laying out on Ms. Libby's retirement rocking chair, and it was a tarp, right?
She told me that it was a blue vinyl type looking tarp, yeah, type material. and that Alec came in and it was folded up or balled up in his arms. And then after he left, she noticed it laying on the chair.
And so you showed her a picture of this balled up rain jacket and said, is it this color? Is that what you did?
I asked her, I knew she wasn't going to be able to identify the raincoat because the picture I showed her was it from our lab where it's opened up and spread out. And she's telling me that it was balled up. So I know she's not going to be able to identify the raincoat, but she can at least identify or attempt to identify the color.
I mean, you read reports of her interview and probably saw, you know, her entire interview by video, did you not?
Yes.
And you understand that she said she saw that thing two times, right?
I don't recall that, sir.
You don't recall her?
The two times with her, with Alec coming in with it and then seeing it on the chair.
Yeah. And it wasn't balled up when she saw it on the chair. That's not the report you received, right?
No, but it also wasn't spread out, opened up like it was in the picture that I showed her.
She didn't tell you it was spread out, opened up on the retirement chair?
She told me it was laid across the chair is the information that I received.
Okay. Wasn't balled up though, right?
No, sir.
Yeah, you didn't show her a picture of the rain jacket, right?
I did show her a picture of the rain jacket.
As balled up?
No, sir.
You showed her a picture of the rain jacket that was open.
I believe I showed it. I'm not sure. I know I showed her the picture of it opened up to see if she recognized the color.
Okay. Well, I think the jury will remember what she testified about, but
sustained.
And you know that rain jacket did not have any blood. I mean, it tested for blood. There's no blood on it, right?
I'm aware of that, yes, sir.
Okay. And if someone had wrapped up shotgun killing Paul in that rain jacket, you expect to find blood, would you not?
At least DNA, yes.
Well, there's no DNA either, right?
Yes.
So there's no DNA and no blood in that rain jacket, right?
There's no DNA and yes.
And you know it was tested with LCV and there was no presumptive sign of blood there, right?
Correct.
So are you willing to agree that it doesn't look like that rain jacket was used to carry any murder weapons on the night of June the 7th?
They had weapons in them. I would believe that they had weapons in them at some time because there was GSR in them.
Yeah. And we don't know if that was 5 years ago, 3 years ago, 1 year ago, do we?
Correct.
We do know from folks working on the investigation that you're leading is there's no blood or no DNA in that rain jacket.
Correct.
And you know from your experience that there would be blood on the shotgun, and if you're wrapping it up in that jacket, you're going to have blood on the jacket. Right?
You would believe that there would be blood or DNA on the barrel of the shotgun, but until you actually have it to test it, I can't sit here and say, yes, it would be there.
Okay. And we know it wasn't cleaned off because if it had been washed off, if the GSR would have been washed off, correct?
If they wiped the exterior of the barrel for blood or DNA, but it still doesn't wipe off the particles that are in the barrel that could fall down and out.
All right. And let's talk about washdown. Did you notice any wet spots in the back of the Suburban?
No, sir.
You notice any wet spots in the back seat of the Suburban?
No, sir.
Did it look like the Suburban, anything wet had been placed in the Suburban?
No, sir.
Okay. And if Alec Murdoch had cleaned up after committing these horrendous murders, as wouldn't you expect to find some trace evidence of blood somewhere in the house, if that's where it occurred?
If he cleaned up in the house, yes.
And did you find any trace evidence of blood in the house indicated Alec had cleaned up?
If he cleaned up in the house, no.
So the answer is no, you didn't find any trace evidence of blood in the house. Is that correct?
No, sir.
That's not correct?
There was no trace evidence of blood found in the house, no.
Thank you. Did you find any blood on the carpet, floors, or anywhere throughout the house?
No, sir.
Now let's talk about Alex's clothes. On July 7th, 2021, you obtained the Snapchat video of Alex in khakis and this short sleeve dress shirt taken by Paul sometime on June the 7th. Is that correct?
I did not receive it on June the 7th, but I did receive it, yes.
Do you have notes when you received it?
There was a Snapchat, it was an extraction from his phone, from Paul's phone, and then we did a search warrant to Snapchat to get that video.
And you got the video in early July 2021?
I believe that's when we got it back.
And Agent Owen, it may not be in your narrative, your case management notes, but
I don't see it indicated in my notes, but I know I did not get that Snapchat video the night of June the 7th or the early morning hours of June the 8th.
No, I said July. I'm sorry.
Okay. We got it a couple weeks after, yes.
Yeah, so by early July, you had the Snapchat video.
Yes.
And it's in evidence as Exhibit 306. Will you please just pull it up, Doug, and let's freeze it, stop it right there. Now, is this the same video that you showed Alec during the August 11th, 2021 interview that the jury and all of us just watched?
It appears to be the same one, yes.
I mean, and you're pointing out to Alec in that interview, you know, here's a picture of you in these clothes, and when did you change? That was your question, right?
Yes, sir.
And his answer was, I don't really remember when I changed. Is that right?
That is correct.
And it looks like he's wearing khaki pants, right?
Yes.
And it looks like a dress shirt. I think that's what you called it in the interview. Is that right?
Yes.
Would you agree it looks like a blue dress shirt?
It's a light blue, yes.
Okay. And you agree that on August the 11th, at the conclusion of the interview, you essentially confronted him. Did you kill Maggie? Did you kill Paul? And he asked, am I a suspect? That happened on August 11th. Is that right?
Yes, it did.
And you said, I got to go where the evidence leads me.
Is yes. Right?
And you testified here today that on that date, Alec Murdoch was the one and only suspect.
He was the only known suspect at that time, yes.
And I think you testified that that you had interviewed Blanca, or you got some Blanca, but where Blanca had talked about a conversation she had with Alec after this interview on August 11th.
It was sometime later, yes.
And Alec was asking during this conversation with Blanca, you know, what do you remember I'm wearing?
Objection. Nature for the objection.
State v. Sweet, self-serving hearsay it calls for. He's asking him what the defendant said.
Objection sustained.
Did you learn in the course of your investigation that after you confronted Alec as being suspect and showing him this video that he questioned Blanca about what he was wearing that day? Is that fair?
Yes.
Okay. Up until August 11th, Alec had given you carte blanche to search anywhere, anytime on any property he had. Is that right?
That is correct.
And on August 11th, he was encouraging you to try to get information from General Motors, and he would do whatever he could to facilitate that exchange, right?
Yes.
And up until August 11th, I mean, you'd reached out to Alec, me, John Marvin, whenever you need to go on property to do anything, and you always got consent, correct?
That is correct.
And anything you asked, for the most part, it was provided?
Yes.
At no time prior to August the 11th, 2021, did you ask Alec Murdoch, where's that blue shirt, where are those khaki pants, where are those shoes, did you?
No, sir, I did not.
And you have never asked him for that blue shirt, those tan shoes, and those khaki pants, have you?
No, sir.
And the reason you didn't, because you weren't concerned about those clothes, your investigation has been focused since early June on the t-shirt he was wearing, the shorts he was wearing, and the shoes he was wearing at the time he called 911, right?
Yes.
Is that correct?
Yes.
And you were actively investigating whether or not the t-shirt had evidence of high-velocity blood spatter, which you would expect to find on someone who was shooting Paul.
Back spatter, yes.
Back spatter. And your agency, in fact, engaged an expert out of state to give his assessment on whether there was high velocity back spatter on the t-shirt, shorts, or any part of the clothing, right?
Yes, we asked an individual to examine it to look for back spatter.
And that was after it had been sprayed with, the shirt had been sprayed with LCV to see if there was any indication of blood on the shirt.
Yes.
Okay. And I noticed that you opened up in these exhibit boxes, you opened up, pulled out Alec's shoes, you pulled out Alec's shorts. Mr. Meadows paraded shorts around the courtroom. But you didn't pull out the shirt, is that correct?
No, sir.
Because the shirt has turned purple completely, has it not?
Yes.
Okay, and that was from treating it with this LCV?
That is correct.
Okay.
That is my understanding.
Right. Now, when you presented this case to the Colleton County Grand Jury to obtain a Truebill indictment, you testified under oath that an expert had found multiple...
Is he talking about grand jury presentation? Colleton County, there's not a record of a county grand jury.
I didn't hear the complete question. It sounds objectionable, but let me hear the question.
Well, let me lay a foundation. Agent Owen, before you testified before the Colleton County Grand Jury, you prepared an outline of your presentation, did you not?
I did.
And in that outline, you identified essentially a narrative of what you were going to tell the grand jury, correct?
Yes.
And did you follow that narrative?
For the most part, yes.
And in that narrative, didn't you state that an expert found multiple particles of blood spatter on the shoulders in front of Alec's shirt? Isn't that correct?
Yes.
And is that what you told the Colleton County Grand Jury?
Yes.
However, what SLED and this expert out in Oklahoma overlooked is Agent Zapata's confirmatory blood testing, about which she testified earlier in this trial, that out of 74 cuttings from Alec's t-shirt, zero tested positive for human blood. Y'all completely overlooked the fact that when you did hemotracing test to confirm whether it's blood, it came up negative. And that wasn't that overlooked?
I had never seen that report.
Well, when did you see the report?
November of 2022.
Okay. After Alec had been indicted and months from trial, is that right?
Yes.
Now, a couple of things. You talked about on the tape that we just saw when you interviewing Alec. You told him that there's no unknown DNA taken from the crime scene. Do you remember that on the tape?
At that time, yes.
Making that representation?
Yes.
That was August 11th?
Yes, sir.
2021? On August 11th, 2021, did you know that there was unknown DNA of a male obtained from Maggie's fingernail clipping?
I believe what it was explained to me is there was one allele under the fingernail, which is not enough for confirmatory test on the DNA.
Okay. What did you hear in court? There are three alleles?
I heard that it was one.
And another thing, what was tested for DNA? Do you remember?
I do not have that report in front of me, so I'm not going to attempt to speak on that right now.
Yes. Well,
there was a multitude of items. I know that.
Well, I mean, well, let's start with Alec's shirt was tested for DNA, was it not?
Yes.
Maggie's clothes were not tested for DNA, were they?
No, they were not.
Paul's clothes were not tested for DNA, were they?
No, they were not.
Now, in your communication with Mr. Bevel out in Oklahoma, at one point in time, he asked you to look into whether there was a blood mark in Paul's pocket and whether there was a matching blood mark on the outside of Paul's pocket. Do you remember that?
Yes, sir.
Was any DNA testing done of that area?
No, sir.
But Alec's shirt was DNA tested front and back, right?
Correct.
But Alec wasn't the victim of any crime on the night of June the 7th, was he?
Not to my knowledge, no.
So why are you testing Alex Murdoch's clothes for DNA? What are you expecting to find?
Evidence to include or exclude him.
Okay, so he had told you that he had gone up to the bodies of Paul and Maggie, right?
Yes.
Okay. And what DNA result would have excluded him?
Well, sorry, the lack of any other DNA would have excluded him.
All right, so you didn't find any other DNA except, I guess, Nolan Tootin when he hugged him that night, right?
Correct.
So did that exclude him?
Well, the shirt wasn't our only piece of evidence.
Well, the shorts. Did you find any?
The shorts weren't our only piece of evidence.
I'm trying to focus on DNA.
Okay.
I mean, so the DNA didn't really add much whatsoever. Is that correct?
Correct.
In fact, it certainly support conclusion that he could not have been wearing those clothes at the time Paul was murdered, right?
That's a distinct possibility, yes.
Well, I mean, we already talked about, and the jury's already seen how gruesome Paul's injuries were. They've seen the blood in the feed room, and they've seen everything that was unimaginable. There was no DNA found on Alec's shirt from Paul, was there? Except for a little piece down the hem.
There was some DNA of Paul on that shirt, yes.
There was just a little piece at the hem, is that right?
I believe there was one other spot, but yes.
Okay. In your outline to the Collin County grand jury, it indicates on page 18 that you found DNA in the areas of spatter that were identified belonging to Alec, Maggie, and Paul. Do you remember that?
Yes, and that was from the report that I had in my possession.
And was that accurate?
Now that I have the hematrace report, the hematrace indicates the parts that she tested, no human blood was found.
So you didn't know at the time, but you know now that what you told the Collin County grand jury was not correct. Is that fair?
In reference to the shirt, correct.
Talk about a few other things right quick. On the night of early morning hours of June the 8th, you obtained Alec's clothes, his shirt, shorts, shoes, correct?
Yes, sir.
And you mentioned in your testimony that you wanted to get them there and then, but Buster was coming to the house, and so you graciously allowed Alec to go greet his son, and then you went up and got his clothes, correct?
Yes.
And when you got his shirt, did you, let me back up. You were standing in the doorway as he was changing?
Yes.
So you could see him changing?
When he took his shorts off, I gave him some privacy.
Okay. And then he came out and dropped the shorts in a bag?
Yes. I can't remember if he dropped them in there or if he handed them to me and then I put them in there.
And if he handed them to you, you would have had latex gloves on for sure, right?
Yes.
And did you put the shorts in one bag?
Yes.
And then drop the T-shirt in another bag?
Yes.
Okay. And the shoes, I guess, in a third bag?
Yes, sir.
And did that happen sort of in the hallway?
That happened right there while I was standing in the doorway, yes.
Okay. And at the time, Alec was wearing, I guess, sort of like gym shorts or something he'd put on?
He put on clothes after he had changed, yes.
Do you remember what kind of clothes he put on? Like,
not exactly, no, sir.
Were they shorts?
I don't recall what he put on afterwards.
Was it a T-shirt?
I do not recall what he put on afterwards.
Okay. Can you say for sure it wasn't a pair of khaki pants?
Exactly. Ask him that.
Can you say for sure it was not a pair of khaki pants?
I do not know what he put on afterwards.
Now, we've heard about a pair of khaki pants laying on the floor in the bathroom. Did SLED, Agent McAllister, anyone ever seize a pair of khaki pants from the house?
Not to my knowledge.
One of the things that you testified to, and I just want to see if we can clear it up. I don't. You stated in your testimony that Alec indicated he attempted to contact Nolan Tootin that night. Are you sure it was Nolan and wasn't Rogan?
He contacted Nolan Tootin that night and attempted to contact Rogan Gibson that night.
Okay. And you also mentioned that as you're driving from Charleston, it's intermittently raining, sometimes hard, sometimes not so hard.
Yes, sir.
And then when you got to Moselle, it looked like it had been raining. Sometimes it rained hard, sometimes not so hard.
Yes, sir.
And wasn't it true that rain was dripping off the rooftop of the kennels and above the feed room onto Paul's body?
That's a fair assessment.
Okay. And on his body, and then it was washing down the concrete pad. I mean, that's a fair assessment also, isn't it?
Yes, sir.
And if a jury has seen in this trial photos of puddles of water that may look like blood, it's very easily explainable that it came from the rain dropping on Paul's body, right?
Yes.
Okay. I think you covered it. Alec Murdoch called you multiple times, June and July and early August, asking for an update. Did he not?
We communicated. Sometimes it was via text and sometimes it was via phone call.
You're right. And not only did he want an update for himself, but he also kept wanting you to update Maggie's parents as well.
And I met with Maggie's parents, yes.
Sure. But Alec was requesting that of you, was he not?
Well, he was requesting that of me, yes, but I also intended to meet with Maggie's parents regardless if he requested it or not.
Okay. And you're also aware that Alec and Buster and his family put up a reward for tips.
I knew a reward was offered. It was under my impression that it came from the law firm, but I know that a reward was offered of $100,000 with an expiration date.
In the interview of August 11th, one of the questions that Alec had of you was essentially whether Maggie and or Paul suffered. Mm-hmm. Do you remember that?
Yes, sir.
And I think you told them that if they did, it wasn't for very long, a matter of seconds. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
Now, we'll talk about the shot shells. The shot shells that were found in the feed room where Paul was murdered, there was a buckshot and Winchester dry lock, mm-hmm. waterfowl.
Yes, sir.
That's not turkey load, right?
I was told it was turkey load at first. I'm not a hunter. I'm not 100% sure. I know it was small pellets and big pellets.
Right.
I know the difference between small pellets and buckshot.
So you were operating lead investigator under the impression that it was buckshot and turkey load, right?
Yes. Someone told me that night that it was turkey load.
And turns out it wasn't turkey load. You agree with that?
I agree.
Okay. And I think Agent Croft got involved because of his knowledge of firearms and shot shells and the works, correct?
Correct.
Okay. And you mentioned that in the interview, you told Alec that there were multiple guns found on the property that were loaded with buckshot and turkey load. Do you remember that?
I believe I used buckshot, birdshot.
Okay. Agent Croft had testified, but can you identify any weapons that were loaded with buckshot and birdshot that were found in the house?
Repeat the question.
Can you identify any weapons found in the house at Moselle that were loaded with buckshot and birdshot?
No, sir.
Now, when you told Alec that there were multiple weapons loaded with that same load, buckshot and birdshot, I mean, was that an investigative tool, or were you just under the misimpression that that was the case?
Investigative tool.
So you lied to him?
I'm allowed to use trickery to elicit a response.
I understand. And so you're trying to trick him. Agreed?
I'm allowed to use trickery to elicit a response. Yes.
And you're allowed to do it, and you did it.
Yes.
But you also testified under oath in front of the state grand jury, said basically the same thing, that there were four shotguns on the Moselle property, and they were loaded with buckshot and turkey load.
Yes.
Now, were you mistaken then, or were you trying to trick the state grand jury?
No, I was not trying to trick the state grand jury.
You were mistaken?
No.
What?
The shotguns that we recovered from the house had two different loads in them. They weren't Winchester or Federal. They had different loads in them. So when I tell the state grand jury that there's different loads in the shotguns, there were different loads in the shotgun.
So you're saying you weren't telling them that it was buckshot and turkey load, but you were telling them it was just different brand names of something?
I may have used buckshot and turkey load or birdshot, but they were two different loads.
Well, I think we've established that SLED did not find any weapons at the house with buckshot and turkey load loaded in, right?
That is correct.
I'm going to show you page 48, line 7 through 14 of your statewide grand jury testimony. Hey, gentlemen, do you recognize that to be a copy of your state grand jury testimony?
Yes, I do.
And what date was that given?
Tuesday, November 16th, 2021.
All right. And if you'll go to the page I had open and... And I tell you, I'm going to read the question if you'll read the response. It says, at line 7, all right, and were all of them, to your recollection, loaded that like that? And your answer was?
They were located loaded in a similar fashion.
Question,
yes.
In a similar fashion?
Yes, sir.
Question, with one turkey load and one buckshot load?
Response, yes, sir.
All right, thank you. And that was not accurate, correct?
Correct.
I mean, people do make mistakes, do they not?
Yes, they do make mistakes.
And people make mistakes about time frequently. Is that right?
I would believe that would be the most mistake made is time.
Okay. And here, you were asked to identify inconsistencies with Alex's statements to you, and the one that you pointed out was times. Do you recall that?
Well, the inconsistencies is they kept changing.
Well, that's right. I mean, you said on June 8th he was at his mother's for, quote, a little while. And then you said he changed it on June 10th to 25 to 30 minutes. Do you remember testifying to that?
I do.
And then you said on August the 11th, he said he was there 45 minutes to an hour.
Yes.
Okay. And you found that those were inconsistent.
Well, there was a difference between 20 to 30 minutes and 45 minutes to an hour.
Well, let's work on that. He left the... Well, let me tell you. He told you that he left... the Moselle property between 9 and 9:10, did he not?
He showed me his text messages, and it was narrowed down to 9:06, yes.
All right, so he clearly told you?
9:04, 9:06.
So on the night of June 7th, early morning hours of June 8th, he told you, looking at the text message, I left here at 9:06. Is that right?
Correct.
And he got back, well, he called 911 about 10:06, right?
Correct.
And so he was gone to his mother's almost an hour, was he not?
He was away from Moselle for an hour, but my question to him was, how long were you at your mother, or how long were you at Amita?
And in your investigation, as we established in my cross-examination of you moments ago, a few minutes ago, it's your investigative belief that Maggie and Paul were murdered sometime between 8:50 and 9:06, correct?
Yes.
So, for your investigative purposes, does it make any difference if he's at his mother's house 25 minutes, 35 minutes? Obviously, he couldn't be there an hour and make it back and call 911, but, I mean, isn't that really not material? How long he was at his mom's?
If I'm trying to build a timeline, yes, it is.
Well, your timeline is, you're focused on is 8:50 to 9:06, right?
Well, my timeline and what we're talking about is how long he was away from the house when he says he went to Alameda. So he leaves Moselle at approximately 9:06 is right. When he sends the text to Maggie. And the 911 call comes in at 10:06. So I know he's away from Moselle for an hour. And he says he goes to Alameda. How long did you spend at Alameda?
Right.
He tells me 20 to 30 minutes. Then he goes 45 minutes to an hour.
I see. I got it. So it's possible that he was only at Alameda for 5 minutes and he was spending the other time hiding evidence. I mean, that's, understand that that would be what you're looking at, right?
Yes.
But General Motors has sent their records in and we know he went straight to Alameda and drove straight back, right?
That is true. But if you look at the GPS points that came from General Motors, one of them puts him way in the backyard of Alameda.
Right.
Not in the driveway or where it's normal for them to park.
In the backyard at the door where Ms. Shelley Smith says he knocked on.
I believe that points closer to Ms. Libby's work shed.
Okay, we'll get there. Okay. But we know from phone records, essentially when he got there, like 9:22, correct?
Yes, sir. I believe that's the time, yes.
And we know from the GM telemetry data and the GM OnStar and other records what time he left, about 9:45, right?
Yes.
And so we know exactly how long he was there.
Yes.
But the fact that he couldn't recall whether he and Paul rode around for an hour and a half, two and a half hours, you found that significant in your investigation?
Yes.
Now, you also testified that that in the fall of 2021, there started up a financial investigation into Alex's financial dealings. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
And you said that overlapped and fed off each other with what your murder investigation was doing?
Yes, it involved Alec.
Right.
So we were looking at the totality of the circumstances and seeing if there was any paths that crossed or...
Okay. Well, I tell you what, I'll skip one part. In your interview, as of August 11th, you told us that you had excluded everyone from the circle who had come in to the circle except for Alec, and he was your one and only suspect at that point in time.
Yes.
And you talked about interviewing C.B. Rowe and him telling you where he was on June 7th, right?
Yes.
But he later, you found out, he lied to you about where he was on June 7th, right?
Yeah, he came forward with, and he came forward and was honest with us without us even approaching him.
All right. But he was initially told you one thing about where he was, subsequently came, told you I was not honest about where I was.
Yes, he didn't want Mr. Murdoch to know that he was looking for another job in fear of being fired.
Okay. But it's part of this financial investigation that overlapped, you developed information that Alec was stealing money from a law firm, client money, to support a drug addiction, did you not?
That's what was purported, that it was for a drug addiction, yes.
Okay. And you learned through your investigation that Alec was paying up to $50,000 a week to a guy named Curtis Eddie Smith for drugs, right?
That's what was told to us, yes.
And you learned through this investigation what was told to you, that Eddie was buying these drugs from other folks, members of Sand Hill Drug Gang, right?
Yes.
And the Sand Hill Drug Gang was a precursor to the Cowboys drug ring, right?
I'm not familiar with the Cowboys, but that's what I've been told, yes.
And you learned that Eddie owed these drug gang members a lot of money for drugs that were sold to Alec, didn't you?
I believe the information came into that they weren't worried about what was owed because they knew they were going to get paid.
That came to you after the Maggie and Paul were murdered, right?
That came to us after September-ish incident, yeah, as well.
And did you ever conduct a cell phone analysis of these drug gang members to see where they were on the night of June the 7th?
I didn't have their phone numbers. In my experience, that they don't keep the same phone numbers. They use what's called burner phones. But we also did an analysis around Moselle trying to encompass anybody else coming in, and that information did not pan out. There was only two people identified, and they were emergency first responders.
And you're talking about the geofencing stuff?
Yes, sir.
Well, did you ever obtain any DNA samples from these drug gang members to see if they matched Maggie's fingernail?
No, sir.
And you really never put them in the circle, did you?
The investigation into that, in my understanding, I'm not investigating the drug aspect. That investigation is still ongoing from my understanding.
That concludes segment number 4 of our continuing coverage in the trial of Alec Murdaugh here on the 15th of February, 2023. It's day 16 in the courtroom, and there's still more to come. Stay with us.